Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. Today on ID the Future, we hear once again from a symposium that was held in Berkeley, California in November 2019 in honor of the late Philip E. Johnson. It was an occasion to hear from multiple people who had been influenced by Philip Johnson, including people perhaps a generation down the chain of others who had been influenced by him. One of those was Dr. Ann Gager, who holds a PhD in zoology and works with Dr. Doug Axe in the Biologic Institute. She shares today about her studies on genetics and the question of whether it's even possible that there was an original pair to whom all humans can trace their descent. And she also shares the surprising background that brought her to this study.
It's a great honor to be here. I am the only one here who never met Phil. I didn't have that honor. I am the second wave, the generation who came after Phil. And I'd like to make two comments. One is, I don't fit the phenotype in a number of ways. First of all, I'm short, and I'll leave the rest to your imagination, but I do fit it in one way. My freshman year in college, my first biology textbook, I opened it and read the foreword, and it said, "We want to tell you that we believe biology is strictly material. All of our work is based on material explanation. We repudiate anything like vitalism." And I said, "Says who?" I had the phenotype already. So, another thing that came along with the job was Phil's attitude that we should be independent thinkers. And Doug gave me the freedom to do that. I started doing protein work with Doug, exploring the difficulty of getting new proteins from old ones. But I took a different path around about 2011. What happened was a philosopher asked me the question, how strong is the evidence against Adam and Eve? You know, scientists were always saying we had to come from a population of 10,000. How strong is that evidence? And I said, you know, I've never thought about it because I think that Darwinism is a bigger problem. If Darwin is wrong, then we don't have to worry about that. But I'll go look. And I came across this paper. If you Google Science and Eve, this is what comes up, The Myth of Eve. And it's by Francisco Ayala, who's a very famous evolutionary biologist, also a former priest. And he had it out. He wanted to disprove Eve in a big way. He chose to study a gene called HLA-DRB1. And it's one of the most polymorphic genes in our body. And he thought he could prove that there were too many versions of that gene to have come through a population of just two individuals. So he did his analysis and came up with the estimate that there had to be at least 32 versions of that gene at the time we diverged from chimps. Oh, by the way, I should also say, I have a tremor, it's not nerves, it's inherited. And that's why I switched to working on people, because I don't have to pipette them. Okay, the other reason you see Adam in the genome is because a lot of evangelicals hopped on the bandwagon and said the scientists were right and we couldn't believe in a historical Adam and Eve. Adam and the Genome being one of the more recent books. So, what happened? Interestingly enough, Francisco Ayala's paper was challenged by scientists themselves. A few years later, a group from Sweden, Bergström et al., published a paper in, I believe it was Science, saying that he had done it wrong, his method was faulty, and that actually the result should have been 7 alleles, not 32. And then a few years later, they did it again with the whole gene, not just a small piece, and it dropped to 4. Now, why is that significant? Each of you has two versions of every gene, one from your mother, one from your father. So if you have Adam and Eve, how many versions of a gene could there be in that pair? One, two, three, four. So they found four versions could be carried for that gene. I found this highly suspicious and intriguing. And there were other things about the paper that made me think, you know, this is serious. We really need to investigate this. The population geneticists had used indirect methods for their tests against the question of how many our original population had to be. We needed a direct test. We needed to start from two, let the population run, and then see if we could generate a population with statistics like our own population now. That meant I needed to find a population geneticist who could do that, make a model, and someone who could program it, because I can't do either thing. Well, I think it was probably Doug who heard by way of Peter Luce there was a population geneticist in Sweden named Ola Hirscher, and I met with him in Copenhagen, and he was really keen to do it. And a couple of years later, he had a model, and then we found someone to program it. And to make the long story short, you get to see the results. This story actually has an end to it. We published it just a few weeks ago. Oh, I get to tell you the end of Ayala. There is another scientist who came along who wanted to disprove Adam and Eve for himself using the HLA gene. His name is Josh Swamidas. He was going to use the HLA gene to show that we couldn't have come from two, and he met his match also. He discovered that the HLA genes all undergo convergent evolution instead of having them evolve through the population by common descent. The quote there is long and complicated. Just focus on the word stunning and amazing. He was shocked. He emailed me when he found this result and he said, "You've been validated." Okay. Here are the graphs. What you see is on the left what's called a allele frequency spectrum. It graphs the alleles in terms of the frequency. If you have a gene that has two versions, say 0.2 and 0.8, 20% of one version and 80% the other version, that would be 0.2 on the graph. You ignore that 0.8 since it's covered, it's implied. Or 0.4 and 0.6, etc. And then the number 0.2, all the genes that have 0.2 for their frequency are summed up and graphed at that point. So you notice that on the left, there are a lot of genes with that frequency, the low frequency. Those are the genes that are new mutations. So there are a lot of rare genes that are new mutations. And then as time goes on, they drift to the right. Where you see purple, those are the African population. Where you see blue and green, those are Asian and European. Where you see the orange and the red, those are our simulations. What do you notice? Our simulation fits right next to the African. It's a really good match. Really good. Now on the right is what's called a linkage disequilibrium graph. It is a map of recombination across the length of a chromosome. It's for two different chromosomes, chromosome 1, chromosome 22, the largest and the smallest of our chromosomes. So, once again, our scenarios fit right up next to or in between the actual curves from our population. It's a really good match. Now, what do our simulations consist of? You start with a standard mutation rate, standard generation time, a growth rate of doubling once every 10 generations, up to about 16,000, and then hold it steady. Those are pretty standard values, nothing extreme. The difference between the two scenarios, one is you have a scenario where Adam and Eve, if you want to call them that, the two individuals are exactly the same. Their chromosomes are identical. So no special assumptions there. How long does it take to get to a situation where they match the curve? 2 million years. That's a long time. That's when Homo erectus first makes his appearance. All right, what about scenario two? If you assume that there was original diversity in the chromosomes, which is a reasonable assumption for two different reasons, there are two scenarios for there have been two individuals. One is there could have been a pre-existing population and then a bottleneck where a sudden crash in the population and only two are left. They would have brought diversity with them. The other possibility is a unique creation, in which case God could have modeled anything he darn well wished, and he could have put diversity in. So we model in diversity, and the age for the origin dropped to 500,000, which is about the time of Neanderthals and Denisovans, a little bit younger than their age appearance. What do I conclude? The big message is this: how strong is the evidence against Adam and Eve? Not very strong. They can't make the claim anymore that there could not have been a first pair. This says it's very clear. There could have been a first pair. Second, without assumptions, the times are old. It's possible to test further variables. For example, if the population split up, tribes migrating, that will affect the result. Those are all work that needs to be done in the future. Third, the fact that I'm standing here giving this talk is a marvel. It's truly a marvel. All right. God had a plan, and he brought me here. I didn't start doing science again till I was 50. He directed me out of science and back into it 3 separate times. I quit science. Age 30, I went back to get my PhD. I had kids. I left science. About 50, I looked up and I said, what's this thing about evolution? I got a bee in my bonnet about evolution. And lo and behold, I discovered there was this place called Discovery Institute in Seattle, and I was living in Seattle, and I started reading books. And then I went for an interview, and it happened to be when Doug was coming back, and they were starting a lab, and lo and behold. And then somebody asked me this silly question about Adam and Eve, and here I am. Isn't that amazing? Wow. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ann Gager sharing at a November 2019 symposium in honor of the late Philip E. Johnson. For more great podcasts like these from the Discovery Institute, please stay tuned to ID the Future at idthefuture.com or on your favorite podcast app. For ID the Future, this is Tom Gilson. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.